This program was brought to you by Eat On North. Eat On North is a casual restaurant where honest, uncomplicated food is served without pretension. Find Eat On North at hotelonnorth.com.
Hi, this is Joe Campanelli, the host of In The Drink. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, a food writer and a director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deeper understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from a studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli and supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi, ramen, izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I will try to demystify it in this program with my co-guests. And my guest today is Stephen Grovitz, who is a big supporter of Japanese culture and has an amazing Japanese cultural space called Global Sushitsu in Flatiron. We'll talk about how Stephen got into Japanese culture, why he created Global Sushitsu, and his various activities at Global Sushitsu, and more. Hello, Stephen. Welcome to Japan.
Thank you for inviting me.
Okay, so you're extremely familiar with Japanese culture, and today you wear Japanese traditional clothes called samurai, and you look amazing. So, and then you speak very fluent Japanese as well. So what is your background?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say just learning about Japanese culture. I've been going to Japan for about 20 years, and it's very deep, and the more I know about it, I find out the less I do. So I started going to Japan 20 years ago when I sold one of my companies, a flat screen TV company, to Panasonic. Mm. And I went on their board of directors, which required quarterly meetings. Mm. So I was going to Japan every 3 months.
Right. So you're from New York.
I'm a native-born Manhattanite.
Mm, very rare.
Yeah, very rare. Matter of fact, I was born in the same hospital my mother was, which is even rarer.
Oh, wow. Amazing. And then, so you know as a kind of a supporter of the inventor of plasma TV, which is dominant in this
yes,
market.
Yes, I was an encourager. Yes, a supporter, yes.
Mm. Okay. And so did you... lived in Japan at some point, or just visited frequently?
I've been going back and forth, living in Japan for periods of about 2 to 3 weeks at a time. But I never lived there regularly for months at a time.
Oh, wow.
But typically, I would be there 3 or 4 times early in my career with Japan, and now it's down to about 2 to 3 visits a year.
Mm, that's still a lot.
Yeah, still a lot.
Right. Yeah, that's because you are really like. Understanding Japanese culture so deeply, I thought you lived.
Well, again, I understand it enough that I want to know more about it.
Mm, that's the master's work. Right. So, what was so special about Japanese culture for you then?
Well, I went to Japan after sort of my middle life, and as a New Yorker, we only learn about Western culture. Mm. Our view is all culture comes from the West. It starts in Egypt and goes to the Greeks and the Romans and medieval times, the Renaissance, Italy, France, etc. And we really don't get a background on Asian culture.
Mm.
So when I went to Japan for the first time, I was completely overwhelmed by the difference of Japanese culture or Asian culture and then Western. And particularly in Japanese culture, I found it to be very deep and sort of mystical. I know that sounds like very trite.
Mm-hmm.
And I started learning more about their ways. And there's a term that we'll use during this interview. It's called wabi-sabi.
Mm.
And wabi-sabi is one of these words that cannot be defined. It's just it's the essence of being Japanese.
Mm.
And so the more I learned about the wabi-sabi culture, the relaxed, uneven culture of nature, the more I wanted to learn. So it was a little personal renaissance, and it was the difference of Western vis-a-vis Asian culture that really was quite seductive for me.
Okay, so different way to look at the whole world.
Yeah, it's a different way. It's a different eye. It's a different temperament. It's a different way to breathe, a different way to eat. I know that's one of your concerns. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if the grass is greener on the other side, but it's certainly different. And I think life should be complete with all the various experiences that the world has to offer.
Okay, that's interesting, because I whenever I go to Tokyo, where I actually grew up, there's the same amount of energy between New York and Tokyo, but energy in Japan kind of goes to the ground and you know, absorbed in the ground, but here in New York it explodes to the air.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, but I think Japan has been, I don't know if you know this, but it's been, or senses, but it has been westernized a great deal. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether there is a lot of energy in Tokyo, but I think to really understand the, and I always recommend this to the first-time visitors to Japan, is you go to Kyoto first, and to see what the heart of Japan is. It's very different than Tokyo.
Right.
And once you visit, and I recommend this to all your listeners, first time visitors, once you visit Kyoto, you can go to Tokyo and you can see all the roots of Japanese culture there. But it is different, and particularly the restaurants, the galleries, the way of moving. But you're right about that.
And I agree with you, because, you know, the Nara and Kyoto, that's where the whole culture started with emperors, and then all those samurai started to spread up to Tokyo area.
Yeah, and I still think that the best meal you can have is kaiseki and in autumn. Why autumn? Because it's the harvest season in Kyoto. So anytime I can do that, get a full kaiseki, haimyo in Kyoto during the autumn, is I'm there.
Right, it's beautiful, turning leaves.
You often do that?
Well, I think 2 years ago, that was my first real vacation after my high school trip.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah, it was, I didn't want to leave. And then compared to my experience in Tokyo, it's kind of the opposite, like we described.
Yeah.
You know, like... you feel, oh, this is the center of the Japanese culture.
When I go to Japan, I'm mainly in Tokyo. It's the center of my activities.
Right, so business.
Yeah.
Right. But you can choose. And the by beer train, it's only less than 3 hours.
Yeah, no, I was in Japan in last month, and I went to Kyoto for a kimono fashion show. And I was, regrettably, I was in kimono Kyoto for... 14 hours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but I did have a fantastic nabe meal in Gion.
Okay.
At a private restaurant.
Oh, so, wow. So nabe is a pot dish.
Yeah, pot dish, yes.
Private pot dish. Yeah. Right. Oh, wow.
I'll show you pictures later.
Okay. Yeah, maybe you can share on the website.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, so you've been active in promoting understanding Japanese culture through arts in New York City, and could you give us some examples of your activities in New York, other than Global Sabashitsu, which is going to talk in a minute?
Yeah, activity that just ended actually 2 days ago was I sponsor a Japanese film series at Japan Society, and we do this annually. We pick a theme and explore that theme over a period of time. So this year's theme was Japanese musical, and even the Japanese said, "What's a Japanese musical?"
that's my reaction right now.
Reaction. Anyway, we had 10 Japanese musicals from the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, 90s. And some of them were, they were uniquely Japanese. So some of them had references to kabuki and no.
Wow.
Some of them had manga references, but it was quite a... film series. Anyway, the Globus Film Series is an annual event. I sponsor tea ceremonies and other activities.
Right. So the I'll quickly go back to the film series. You started in 2007.
That's correct, yeah.
So that's a long time already.
Yeah.
Right? And I was looking at last year's theme. That was the Stories from the War, featured a 70th anniversary of the end with World War II, so which is completely different theme from this
right,
year's.
Right, right, yeah. So, you know, we had Yakuza, which are gangster movies.
Right.
We had love stories. And so the theme, sometimes we're looking at a particular director, if you would, who may have a long history of Japan. But it gives us an opportunity to look at Japanese film here in New York that is based on thematic interest. Mm. So actually, I don't know what we're going to be doing next year, but... hopefully it'll be a delight like this year.
Mm, okay. So maybe Japanese.
Have you seen our last film was called Memories of Masako. I don't know if you saw that film.
No, I don't think I
recommend
did.
It.
Oh, so, really?
Yes. Yeah, Memories of Masako.
Okay, Memories of Masako.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe available in Netflix or?
Probably.
Okay, I'll look.
Or it's a big movie, yeah.
Great. Okay. Yeah, by the way, for the listeners who are not familiar with Japan Society, it's a non-profit organization and committed to promote mutual understanding between Japan and U.S. So next year, film festival.
Please be my guest. So I started sponsoring at Japan Society, but when I wanted to do something personally, I got into tea ceremony.
Mm.
And so I built this tea house right in the middle of Manhattan at Union Square.
Right. So now it's, let's talk about global Washington.
Okay,
that's what it is, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you opened it in 2013?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
In Flatiron. On Broadway and 20...
Broadway and 19th Street.
19th Street. It's amazing.
Well, it's probably... one of the best examples of a Japanese space, and Washitsu means Japanese space, in New York, if not in the United States. And actually, when I first opened it, I thought it was going to have a very modest purpose of just being a place for a tea ceremony.
Mm.
And once the Japanese community discovered there was a tatami and a soji space.
Mm-hmm. Soji is a paper screen.
Paper screen, sliding paper screen, and tatami is the mat, the woven mats.
Mm-hmm.
Japanese people in New York and also in Japan were approached me one after another and said, "Oh, Steve, can you do a kimono show? Can we have a ceramic show? Can we have a koto? Koto is a Japanese art. Can we have a koto performance?" Mm. And I have a big heart. I said, "Yes, of course." So, but it all started with the Japanese tea ceremony.
Mm. Right. So within the global washitsu, you have a washitsu. That's a room with the tatami and the shoji screen. And that's called the keiseyan.
Yeah, keiseyan is the technical name for the tea house.
Mm-hmm.
And the tea house is an eight tatami room area that has a space where the tea kettle can go and appropriate tea. Tea houses have quite a few requirements. One is a tokonoma. Tokonoma is a sacred alcove, and typically there's a scroll that hangs down.
Beautiful painting.
Beautiful, yes. And so tokonoma is one, and two is there should be two entrances.
Mm.
One entrance that's available for the tea master, and he or she will come in into the tea room from there.
Right, or the host of the ceremony, hospitality.
And another entrance for the guest.
Mm.
What they call mizuya, which is a area where to clean your mizu means water, but mizuya is an area for cleaning your tea utensils.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, that's just part of the Globus Washitsu KSA, as we call it.
Mm-hmm. What's the meaning of it, keiseyan?
I wanted to call I wanted the Japanese translation to be Oasis.
Mm.
And so I asked my team master, I asked the person, the architect of the Japanese room, Hanafusa of Miyasoshi, can we name this tea room Oasis? And they said, both of them came back and said, there's no word in Japanese for Oasis.
Mm.
So they came up with these terms, and maybe you can translate them better than I can.
Right.
That sort of means Oasis, a quiet area for contemplation of tea.
Right. So K means rest or relax, and then Sui means old term green.
Yeah, green. Yeah.
So that would totally make sense.
Yeah. So it makes. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm glad it makes sense to you because
right.
it's still very mystical to me. So.
Right. And the tea for tea ceremony, that small tea house has special name usually. So
yes, they all end with a dash and an.
Right.
So yes, K Sui An.
Mm-hmm. So. Right, An is a little place,
yeah.
Like a special little place. Right. So so you have also Garo, that's an exhibition space upstairs.
Yeah, I have my spaces have three levels. I'm not sure that you saw the first level.
Mm-hmm.
So first level's on the seventh floor.
Okay.
And I actually started tea ceremonies on the seventh floor, but it didn't have all these requirements that I mentioned.
Mm.
And the seventh floor now is a ryokan.
Oh, that's
ryokan.
A place you can stay. Like
that's
in.
Correct. So I have traveling artists stay there from Japan.
Mm.
And so next time you come, I'd like to show that to you. So typically we have a traveling artist. They stay on the seventh floor ryokan.
Mm.
It's also tatami rooms. Mm-hmm. With a small kitchenette. And then on the eighth floor, floor above, is the tea house and the mazuya, the kitchen, and also an ante room. So,
right.
And then upstairs is the gallery.
Mm,
so,
okay.
So, but often the gallery spaces, like you saw a kimono show last time, the gallery or the exhibition will include both the tea house when it's not being used and the gallery upstairs.
Right.
Yeah.
So who are the lucky artists who have stayed there?
We've had musicians, we've had painters. And, you know, one of the people that people know a lot is Sebastian Masuda, who's a so-called kawaii artist.
Mm-hmm.
We had Akihito Obama, who's a shakuhachi player, being a flute. But we've had over 50 artists staying there, yeah.
Mm, okay.
So sometimes it's single people, and sometimes we've had up to four or five people all living there.
Mm. Right, so it's kind of like a totally charity, non-profit space. You do just offer
yes, it's
space
non-profit, yeah.
Just to promote
and
the whole...
They're my personal guest.
Mm. Wow. Amazing. Well, thank you for creating that space.
Well, it's my pleasure. And just so your listeners understand, ryokan, the guests sleep on futon.
Mm-hmm.
And so the futon get laid out every morning, and they get rolled up in the nighttime after the... they get laid out, I'm sorry, in the evening, and then in the morning they get rolled up and put away.
Mm-hmm.
So Japanese people have a good tradition of staying in small areas together because they all visited these kind of spaces. Did you do that as a family? Stay in ryokan with your family traveling?
Yes.
Yeah. So it can be tight with three or four people, but it's amazingly organized and tidy and polite.
Right.
Yeah. Yes, but they do stay with me as my guest.
Mm. Right. It's interesting you said that because, you know, it's kind of like a sofa bed in New York City, but in Japanese case, a futon is put in the cabinet or closet.
That's correct.
So the day starts fresh. And then the new space is created by you, and at the night the space to rest is created by you again. So
that's correct. Japanese spaces are being less popular in Japan themselves, but they're the ultimate of flexibility because Japanese space can have tatami space can you can sleep, you can entertain, you can eat. So. it's a delightful and very warm space.
Right, I agree. And but the only problem is if you get used to chairs, you know, well, sitting is a little harder.
Well, yes and no. You know, I've had receptions at Washisu for 40 or 50 people, and we're all sitting down on the tatami mat without chairs. And you can imagine having 40 or 50 people with 40 or 50 chairs and couches. It's impossible because the chairs and couches are literally glued to the ground.
Right.
And so if I have a reception for 30, 40 people, they all make little circles, and the circles will expand or contract. Somebody will go from one area to another area, and it's quite a marvelous dynamic to see people sitting on the floor and on tatami and feeling relaxed. And also, they can move anywhere they want. They're not very restricted by the interior designs of a couch or a chair.
So it's more organic and a communal space.
Yes, and one day I'm going to take a time lapse of one of these great receptions of three circles coming into two circles and then expanding into four circles, and then maybe a set of lovers will go off on the corner and they'll be talking or kissing each other. But it's quite a marvelous flow and ebb and flow of people at one of these rooms.
That's all right. I've never thought of that.
Yeah.
That's great. So what kind of events have you organized at the Global? Yeah, events at the Global.
Well, the events are obviously around Japanese cultures. They've been tea events. They've been tea ceremony events. They've been exhibitions. And I've been getting, as you know, because we met during a kimono event, I've been very involved in the kimono arts.
Right, that was called Kyoto Cool exhibition in March.
Yeah.
And so I was very impressed because the kimono, you know, they were designed by a young couple, but they grew up in Kyoto. And then I think the husband was from very old dying kimono.
That's correct, yeah.
You know? And then because he was so tired of that old tradition and all those workers not well respected, so he came up with the idea of starting a company, respecting tradition, but innovated with new fabrics and design. And it's kimono made into the modern clothes.
That's correct. They're quite young, and they're not your grandmother's kimono, which are very beautiful as well. But they're attracting a whole new young audience in Japan and hopefully around the world.
Right, it's like a geometric prints and anything.
Your listeners can go to do a web search called Martin Antenna, and those are the people who are designing it. But they'll be delighted to see their design.
And I think your website, your Facebook page, showed
Facebook.
A lot of pictures from the
That's
exhibition.
Correct. And we also were very happy to have Ralph Pucci's art mannequins on that. Well, your listeners may be interested. They're typical kimono shows or exhibits are often on kimono frames, which the kimonos are outstretched and sort of flat objects, flat fabric. We decided in that particular show, Akiko-san, to have the kimonos on mannequin and Ralph Pucci mannequins. So they really show our visitors how a kimono, of course the visitors are mainly Westerners, how a kimono looks and how it fits. And it was spectacular.
Right.
It was spectacular.
Yeah, it's more like an active mode of kimono rather than static. I was impressed how you showed it.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, and well, because this is Japanese, I wanted to hear about, you know, what kind of tea ceremony. You invited tea master and have a tea ceremony?
Well, we have, right now, we have two tea schools. One is Omotesanke, and then another one is Tea Whisk. Suheki Mori, who has been with me for the last 4 years. And so your listeners may know what matcha is, which is becoming M-A-T-C-H-A. Matcha is green powdered Japanese tea, which is often whisked. And it's pure tea, and it's, among being very delicious, it has a lot of health benefits. So we have a tea school, two tea schools, and before you drink a matcha, you have something called wagashi, which is a sweet, and it prepares your tongue for
it. Right, and also beautifully shaped
you'd appreciate it.
Seasonal sweets.
Yeah, it could be seasonal. So along with the tea ceremony, we've had various themes. We've had autumn themes. So the tea ceremony is not just a ceremony. It's just there often could be themes and various people. So it's tea ceremonies are to bring people together and to have a very good social chat around the tea. Mm. So, but it's been a very nice experience for us.
Right.
And of course, the tea masters wear kimono, and so it's often the center of Japanese culture in which things get disseminated out.
Mm.
So from the tea ceremony, we've had wagashi workshops.
Mm-hmm.
We've had ceramic exhibits of the chawan, which is tea bowls.
Mm-hmm. Which is a big part of the ceremony.
Big part of it, yeah. So it's a lot of fun to see how one phase of Japanese culture affects the other.
Mm-hmm.
And there is quite a lot of interrelationship between the kimono and the tea ceremony and the Japanese food.
Mm.
As you know, a Japanese tea ceremony could be hours because it's often followed either before or after with a high kaiseki meal. And that could be a lot of fun. For the listeners, it's not 4 hours or 5 hours of sitting on your knees. It's quite an active, right. Thought-provoking time.
Mm, right. Not only numbing legs.
No, not numbing.
Right.
And by the way, I cannot sit on my knees for any extended time.
Right. You kind of get used to it. Because I had a license. It's rusty, but I had a kimono, the tea ceremony license.
Oh, yeah. What school?
It's Urasenke.
Urasenke, yeah.
It's very rusty. Yep. No more questions.
No more questions. Okay.
Right. But it's interesting. So the tea ceremony looks like very, ritual, form oriented. But I think essence is austerity, just like your place.
Yeah. Well, the tea ceremonies that we try to teach, because we have a lot of so-called non-Japanese people, we try to teach the main essence of tea, which is the joy of tea, and we don't really concentrate or fixate on the tradition, although the tradition is very important, because unless someone enjoys the experience, they never come back.
Mm.
So, and if you become too militaristic, they'll never come back. So, one of our puzzles or considerations is how to make the Japanese tea ceremony joyful enough and understandable enough to Americans that they would want to study it.
Right.
And so I think that's important.
Right. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll take a quick break here, and when you come back, we'll talk about Stephen's philosophy for running Global Swashitsu. So please stay with us.
Hi, I'm Brian Alberg, and I'm the executive chef at Eat On North in the Berkshires of Western Massachusetts. Eat On North in the Berkshires of Western Massachusetts is a casual restaurant where good, honest, uncomplicated food is served to our guests. Our restaurant is part of the hotel called Hotel On North, the newly opened boutique hotel in downtown Pittsfield. We source local ingredients from our neighboring farms and offer an all-day dining menu of flavorful American cuisine for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and on weekends we serve brunch. Our oyster bar serves up delicious shellfish and oyster samplers until 11 p.m. Check out our menu at eatonnorth.com and follow us on Instagram.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting live from the studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Stephen Globus, who is a big supporter of Japanese culture and has an amazing Japanese cultural space called Globus Washitsu in Flatiron. So on Global Washitsu homepage, I found the word Ichigo Ichie, which is written in Japanese. And what does it mean, and is it the underlying philosophy of global washitsu?
Ichigo Ichie. Ichi means first.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an expression, a Japanese expression, maybe even a wabi-sabi, and I know you're going to ask, we'll talk maybe more about that, but it's a term that means for this one time only, this is going to happen. Mm-hmm. This has happened. So it's just a unique serendipity of events, of having like you and me here at Roberta's talking. So mm-hmm. this is our Ichigo Ichie moment.
Mm-hmm.
It will never happen again. Right. We may meet some, we may even meet back here for another time, but this is our one moment. So once in our lifetime, and our engineer David is here. So this is our one time together, and it's a very memorable time. And we should keep each of these Ichigo Ichie moments precious.
Right. We tend to overlook it. It's like maybe next time, and then it's not the truth.
Yeah. So it, you know, we, pardon me, we had. In the Globus series, I use that word, Ichigo Ichie, film series, because we've taken Japanese films and we that don't have subtitles, and we translate them and actually burn the subtitles onto the film with a video projector.
Mm.
And that'll never happen again.
Mm.
So in the Globus film series, you'll see a movie with American subtitles, English subtitles, and they'll never happen again. Ichigo Ichie. So once in your lifetime.
I should be reminded every day.
And when you have a fantastic meal in Tokyo or Kyoto or New York or whatever, Ichigo Ichie. Because it's not only the meal, it's the chef, the food, that, and it's the atmosphere and the time of day.
Everything. Right. Because everything's contingent.
Do you use that word sometimes, that phrase?
I should, but
you should.
I tend to forget, so thank you for reminding me.
I'll remind you.
Right. So did you have any memorable encounter with Ichigo Ichie at the Globus Washitsu?
Oh, just so many. So many. Actually, every tea ceremony, every art exhibit, every time I meet an artist, I really feel lucky that these people have passed through, and not only these people, but the people with me, my guests, strangers that happen to come to my space. The exhibit you saw, Kyoto Cool, was once in a lifetime moment for me. And these are people that I met in Kyoto, and it took 1 year to just organize that exhibit. So and I saw them again last month, but it's a different moment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. But I spoke to the couple, and then they were very, very impressed with the Ichigo Ichie, with the New Yorkers. And then they were saying, well, I was standing on the street and tried to find a place, and the New Yorkers are very kind. They come. That's Ichigo Ichie.
Nice to hear. By the way, we went to the Andy Warhol Museum after the exhibit was closed in Pittsburgh, and that was a very good moment for them as well. Ichigo Ichie.
Right. So let's remember, listeners, Ichigo Ichie. Right. This is a precious moment. Never happens again.
Precious moment. Yes.
Right. Okay. And then, so we mentioned the word wabi sabi a couple times. So let's talk about it. So on your homepage, in the heart of Manhattan, we have created a unique space that reminds one of the wabi-sabi spirits, often found in Kyoto's remarkable structures. So what is wabi-sabi, and what is so special?
Okay, we mentioned this before, but wabi-sabi is one of these words that when you try to define it, you lose the meaning. But I always say it's the essence of the heart of being Japanese. So it's not being Japanese, is not the heart of being the heart of Japanese, but it's the essence of it. So it's something removed from something removed, and it's, I think if you even asked Japanese people what it is, they're going to find it very difficult to find. But there are aspects of wabi-sabi being uneven. They don't prefer straight surfaces or hard surfaces. Nature is one of the ruling forces of wabi-sabi. Certainly the tea ceremony is part of the wabi-sabi culture. But I think the more you try to define it and not feel it, you're going to lose it. So for all your listeners, go visit Japan, go visit Kyoto, have a tea ceremony, go to Ryuanji, Ryuanji Shrine and look at the Zen sand garden and sit there, and the wabi-sabi nature will come seeping through.
Right. So
Can you define wabi-sabi?
Well, I actually tried it to get ready for the show. And then, to me, sabi, it's the beauty that comes out over time.
Right.
I mean, usually over time, it gets really ugly or rusty. You know, like actual rust, it's sabi in Japanese. So people look at it and then actually appreciate, you know, something. It's the essence of this object. And it comes out over time. And then wabi is the positive mindset to appreciate that sabi beauty.
But that combination has taken its own meaning, right?
Wabi sabi.
Yeah,
right.
It's unique. You agree it's uniquely Japanese. So do you find wabi sabi in your food as a food editor?
Right. I think so. So like less is more approach is not to hide anything, but just try to show anything in ingredients by itself. And sometimes, you know, we don't manipulate the shape of vegetables, just try to make it as it is. That kind of, you know, attitude, I think.
Thank you, Sensei.
Well, just eat it though. Yeah. Okay, so, so the wabi-sabi is really, you know, in tea ceremony.
Correct, yes.
Right? So do you practice tea ceremony by yourself?
Well, you know, the word practice is a good word. So I'm lucky. Well, first of all, I'm left-handed, and the tea ceremony, tea master always performs in the right hand.
That's tough,
right? And as you know, kaiseki meal, which is a high Japanese meal, should be eaten with your right hand. And it also requires being on your knees. So the quick answer is I'm a very good host. I like to consider myself the shogun. And I have and I have two very lovely tea masters who spent 15, 20 years learning the skills. And they kind of help me along. So I don't necessarily do the tea whiskying and provide the tea and make the beautiful tea sweets wagashi. But as a supporter and an encourager, I like to say that I'm essential for that process.
So cheerleader.
Yeah.
I like the shogun.
But I'm not but these two ladies are spectacular.
So are they based in New York?
They're based in New York, yes.
Okay. So one is Keiko Kitazawa Koichi.
Keiko, yes. Right. Yeah,
she's coming to my show.
Oh, she's
in June.
Coming. Yeah, she's incredibly charming. She's with the Omode Sankei School. And the other one is Suheki Mori from Tea Whisk.
Okay. So, wow. I can't wait. So are they... they teach classes to the public?
They teach classes, yeah. Suheki Mori Tea Whisk is Wednesdays and Saturdays, and Keiko is on Tuesday nights.
Okay, yeah. So if our listeners want to see a tea ceremony or learn, can they check your website and information?
They can write me, and I would direct them to one or both of the tea masters.
Okay, so that's your website, Globus.
Well, the website is NYC, which is New York, washitsu.com.
So it's NYCWASHITSU.com.
Thank you for the plug. And by the way, you know, I have no monetary basis in here. My purpose is to spread Japanese culture.
Because you don't charge even.
But they do, but I don't.
Right, yeah. But the space is always the neck for anybody.
Correct.
So amazing. Thank you for
promoting
everything.
My pleasure, yeah.
And you have organized kimono exhibitions at the Ovas Fashitsu.
Correct.
So you wear kimono beautifully.
Thank you. I do wear kimono from time to time. I think I have about five or six. When I first got my first kimono at a department store in Shinjuku, I thought that would be my one and only. But I've been lucky that people have been giving me kimonos. I've been to kimono flea markets in Harajuku and bought them.
Wow. So,
and the men's kimono is quite easy.
Right.
And they're quite manly. I thought maybe people are going to tease me because they have, you know, they're open leg like a skirt, I guess. And no, they're quite manly. And unlike a woman's kimono where you have to adjust for length, they're made. Men's kimono are made to length, and all you have to do is tie it. So they're quite easy. It's almost like wearing a robe. Quite easy and lovely. Yeah, but I have a few kimonos.
Well, I wish there's a woman's version. Because women's, you have to learn how to put on kimono for women.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Right? And then it could be, if you are good, it could take 30 minutes, something like that. Right?
Yeah.
So.
But maybe you heard me say this, but I think every woman is more beautiful in a kimono, particularly Japanese women.
Okay, I'll practice.
Why? Well, I guess we're going to talk about this. A kimono is a walking art gallery. And also, when a woman's in kimono, I don't know if I'm going to use the word wabi-sabi, but even a man, we're slowed down a little bit. So we're moving a little slower. We're moving a little bit more delicately, more gracefully. You never see a man running in a tuxedo. So it's that kind of thing. It's just you feel there's a sense of elegance and a sense of presence if you're wearing a kimono. I think one of the problems of a Western lady wearing kimono is that she wants to walk like a Western woman, which is kind of fast. New Yorkers especially, a fast walk. You know, there's a big movement in food called slow food. I'd like to think that this can be a movement called slow fashion. Slow fashion. You can dress in a. You can dress. Take your time to get dressed. Look elegant, and when you're dressed, move slowly. Move elegantly. Make each footstep count.
Right. And actually, you know, the exhibition Kyoto Cool, I tried one of those kimono on, luckily. And the way you have to move naturally, for that, your posture gets better.
Your posture is better. Correct.
And then, you know, you have to move elegantly because that's how it works.
Correct.
So
correct.
You don't have to be slow, close, but you can.
That's right. You're, but you fit, you evolve when you wear a kimono.
Right, so maybe you can
I want to see your picture.
Well, I posted it on my Facebook.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so maybe you can start some kimono, slow kimono movement
slow,
here.
Yeah, slow fashion, slow
right,
food.
Slow
yeah,
fashion. Okay, so that's the word. Well, slow fashion. Okay, so speaking of, what's the next event?
Well, actually, the next event is it's in June. And June is a wedding, typical wedding month for Americans, and also very active in Japan. We're having something called a Yuchikake exhibition, which are these glorious hand-sewn, multicolored, often with gold and silver fabric and gold leaf overcoats that a Japanese bride will wear. So Misaki Sawada from Sendai has been collecting these, and we're going to show 10 of these gorgeous garments. And when people heard that we're having this wedding-themed exhibit, one of the major Shinto shrines asked me whether we can have a traditional Japanese wedding at my place.
Oh, wow.
So we found a couple, a Japanese couple, and we're having maybe a staff of 10 people coming over from Japan, including shrine maidens, two priests, and a three or four person orchestra.
Wow.
And we're going to have one of these rare Ichigo moments in New York, where we're going to have a Japanese traditional wedding.
Wow. Amazing. Wow.
Yeah, you should come.
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah. Wow. Okay, so we'll talk.
We'll talk.
But it's not for open to our listeners, right? Maybe not.
Well, the exhibition is, mm-hmm. and the wedding itself would be a private event, but we, as you know, in the Meiji Shrine in Tokyo, they'll mm-hmm. have the wedding, and then the wedding party, if you would often walk down, walk down, and everyone would look at them.
Mm.
So yeah, and this entails the Japanese bride to be wearing what they call shiromuku,
mm-hmm.
which is a white with these gorgeous hats.
Mm-hmm. Like wataboshi means round, like a cotton,
and one of these great coats,
mm-hmm.
and of course the groom has to be in. I'm not going to say like a samurai, or he also is going to be in a wedding kimono as well,
wow.
which are quite quite traditional. And it's a beautiful couple. Mm. They're both New Yorkers.
Oh wow!
So amazing. We're able to find a New York Japanese couple that wanted to celebrate with us.
Mm. Okay, so at least our listeners can watch and see the pictures.
Yeah, afterwards. Yeah. It's June 19th. Please no crashers.
Okay.
But please come to the exhibition of these wedding coats. They're spectacular.
So what are the dates for that?
I think the exhibition is June 16th through the 21st, and the private wedding is on the 19th, and we'll be posting when, weather permitting, whether there'll be a wedding procession, probably between Union Square and Madison Square.
Oh, wow.
In New
Amazing.
York. Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, no, we've had many requests of people wanting to see this wedding, so we're going to have to go out to the people and show these beautiful garments. Mm. We're looking very much forward to it.
Right. We pray for the weather.
Pray for the weather, yes.
Right. Okay. So,
and we're also doing one last thing. We're doing a kimono contest, mm-hmm. that's themed is recycle and sustainable.
Mm.
Now, those are two big words. Sustainable, actually, there's no better garment than a kimono for sustainability, because I don't know whether you have, but a Japanese lady may even have their grandmother's kimono,
right.
that's passed from grandmother to mother, now to daughter, and they'll save it maybe for their daughter.
Mm.
So sustainability of kimono is certainly there,
mm-hmm.
But kimonos are being rounded up and sold for, sold almost as used fabric.
Right.
So, can they be recycled?
Mm.
Can they be recycled? So that's the question of this competition. So we're very excited about this.
Right.
Show.
I mean, kimono fabric is really beautiful woven, so it has to be recycled.
Yeah, it has to be recycled. Yeah,
right.
And these are tremendous combination of crafts going to kimono.
Right. So it's your campaign you're running.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. All right, so maybe you're going to come back and talk about everything again.
I also like to show Akiko that we've done some food workshops at our place, sushi workshops, and we can talk about this, and maybe you can help us participate in this. But I'd like to thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you.
It went by way quicker than I thought.
So, well, the next one, hopefully it's going to be soon. All right, so thank you for joining us today, Steve.
My pleasure. Domoragato.
どういたしまして. Okay, so the listeners, if you're interested in Global Washitsu, please go to nycwashitsu.com. That's nycwashitsu.com. Or Facebook page, Global Washitsu, and on Facebook. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, please contact us at heritageradionetwork.org. And by the way, we just launched a beautiful new website, so please visit that page. And Japan Eats is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays, always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, and Stitcher Podcasts. Today's show was made possible by Eon North, and our engineer is David Tatasiore. And thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.